You are listening to the Tricorder Transmissions Special.
Episode
31.
And
now,
here are
Craig
and
Jeff.
Thanks for beaming aboard our 31st supplemental log episode of the Tricorder Transmissions. I am Jeff Hewlett, one-third of the regular hosting crew, coming at you with a slightly belated interview we'd been planning since the Las Vegas convention a while back. Taking us a little time to get here, and if you're tired of hearing the convention talk by now, we apologize. We know it's kind of old hat at this point, but this is, in my opinion, an absolutely necessary distraction from our normal content. And trust me, this is going to be a pretty cool episode. So now that brings me around to tonight's guest, whose name has been mentioned so many times in the past couple of recap episodes. You could probably base a drinking game on it. He's the future winner of Dancing with the Stars, obscure cosplay master, the first guest actor from Star Trek Enterprise to ever appear on our show, the ever jovial Jim Morehouse.
Hey, Jeff. Good to be here.
Yeah, man.
I'm looking forward to this.
This is the first time we've spoken since Star Trek Las Vegas a few weeks ago.
Right, when we had an immediate bond.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I think we're going to get into the way we met up at STLV shortly here, but I something that I wanted to point out to you, really, because this is kind of silly, but while I was typing up some notes for this episode, I typed your name into my notepad here on my computer, and it tried to autocorrect your last name to Poorhouse.
I guess that's probably better than Whorehouse, right?
Oh, yeah.
Get that sometimes.
Oh, maybe Apple doesn't have that in its little dictionary of translations, but that probably would have been funnier. But so your travels home from Las Vegas were good?
Yeah, everything was smooth. I did get sick just like everybody else.
Ah, yes.
But fought through it. So
excellent.
So ready to go. Back to the grind.
All right. So, we have obviously a ton of stuff to talk about here tonight. The laundry list of things, including the convention, of course, your appearance on Enterprise, but if you'll indulge me, I'm going to be completely selfish here and lead off with one of my favorite Star Trek interview topics. And I love talking about this with people. What is your Star Trek story? What is your first memory of Star Trek? What was it in your life that got you so into this franchise?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'm one of the originals, not when it aired in the late 60s, but I'm a child of the 70s syndication. Mm-hmm. I used to watch every day at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
Come home from school, fight with my brothers during commercials, and then we'd immediately stop and train our eyes on Star Trek during the broadcast, and we were hooked. I loved it from the very beginning. My favorite episode from TOS is the same as yours, which we bonded over, Devil in the Dark.
Yes,
it was
yes.
Something I remembered very clearly and I think helped kind of pave the way I think. And all the way, I loved motion picture and then into the 80s. And I will say, though, I was one of those jackasses in 1986 and 1987. I was like, you can't do Star Trek without Kirk and Spock. This is what? The Next Generation? What?
It took
me about half a season, and I caught a couple episodes and just relit my love for it. And I've been even more of a diehard ever since.
Wow. Impressive story. So I too was very anti Next Gen when it first came out. And I too softened over time on it and started to accept it and like it and then love it. So,
well, how long did it take you?
A lot longer than it took you.
Okay, because I was, it only took me a couple of months.
Oh, it took me a couple of years.
Okay,
but
all right.
I eventually came around. So my story very similar to yours. I've hashed it over on the show, so I don't really want to rehash it for everybody, but very, very similar. And, we have a lot of people that come on the show who were next-gen kids. Makes me feel kind of old.
Right,
but yep. I think us original series syndication guys, we have a very special bond with Trek.
For sure. But I will say my number one Trek is Deep Space Nine.
We have another regular contributor to the show, Chris, who is an a staunch DS9 supporter as well. So we welcome all kinds, even
of
though
course.
We're an original series focused show for now. But
yep, love it.
Yeah, so we bonded, like you said, over The Devil in the Dark, and that was that Thursday night at the Las Vegas convention. It was the first night, and I guess we might as well just jump into how we wound up stumbling onto each other. So how, I'm still kind of unclear, were you were listening to our show when we were doing the five-year mission episodes, right?
Yeah, that's where I stumbled on you guys or found you guys first. I can't remember, maybe through a retweet or something that they sent out that I think it was just an interview. I think it was just an interview you were doing, like some type of show with them. So I tapped into that, listened in, added you guys to my podcast regular download. And then when you guys started doing the What Are Little Songs Made Of, I mean, great job. I cannot say enough how much I love those.
Thanks. That we actually love doing them. And it's funny that you brought them up because that was something that came out of STLV 2014 after we first met them at the convention, and we wanted to do something more regular with them, and that was the idea that we came up with. And so we're at a little bit of a plug, we're going to be starting up the year 2 coverage here very shortly, so
yeah, looking forward to
it. For that,
love those guys.
Oh, I do too, and I know a lot of our listeners do too. So I remember I was at the karaoke party on that first night. It was, God, what, about 9 o'clock or so, and I had remembered that you had tweeted us earlier in the day about getting together at the convention. I said, you know, let me fire off a quick tweet, and sure enough, a few minutes later, you wandered into the karaoke party in what I thought was quite an obscure costume.
Yeah, it's also known as a very easy costume.
Oh, okay.
but definitely some street cred with that costume, I think, because most of the people, either they get it and they prove their Trek street cred, or they don't get it and have no idea what you're doing and offer you congratulations for having quit smoking.
It took me a little bit to clear the cobwebs out of my mind and realize exactly what you were doing there, but I'll leave the reveal up to you if you want to tell the audience what your costume was.
I was Dr. Nichols, who was from Star Trek IV, which is my favorite original series film, or of all the films, actually.
Wow.
And Dr. Nichols is the Mac computer guy in the scene with Scotty and Dr. McCoy with computer.
So how quaint.
Yeah. Not now, Madeline. So I had all the lines really easy. All you basically need is a red tie, a cardigan, and some funky glasses.
And you pulled it off very well. You actually had the mouse in your pocket.
Oh, and the mouse. Yes, I carried the mouse around, right. I had to track one of those down on eBay.
So how many people do you think, percentage-wise, how many people actually realized who you were?
I would say not, not as many. The ones who made eye contact, I think maybe 50%, seems like it was, you could see it when somebody in their eyes, when they realized who you were. So, but I was counting, I did have about a dozen people offer me congratulations for the I quit smoking button on my lapel, which of course is what makes Dr. Nichols stand out, because he has this random I quit smoking button that's never referenced or explained.
So you never smoked in real life?
No, no. But I had plenty of people. Hey, man, congrats. How'd you do it? It's like, I used the patch.
Oh, you actually had an answer for that question.
I had a couple. Cold turkey.
Nice. Very cool. So that's kind of a controversial stance there, is Star Trek IV being your favorite Star Trek film, huh?
I don't believe that's controversial at all. I think
really?
It's...
Really? You don't get a lot of people arguing with you?
Well, I do get a few, but I think most people like it. I the humor works so good. For me, it's like Trouble with Tribbles level in terms of the way they execute it, in terms of the humor and the comedy. It's not farcical. It's intelligent. I'm a huge animal conservationist, so I love the message. I love that there's no big bad. I love that they never explain the probe. It just shows up, and it's super odd and weird. And they fix it, and the probe leaves. It's just a really, really good film.
Well, I guess it kind of fits in with the motif of The Devil in the Dark being your favorite TOS episode, since it's more about the animal conservation again.
Yes, that's a perfect fit, yep.
So Now, you know what, why don't we jump into your appearance on Enterprise? So you appeared on the fourth season episode Awakening as a relief tactical officer?
That is correct. Listen, I'm just a diehard fan who for 45 years has watched every incarnation over and over again. I call myself the Trek apologist because I love it all. And I apologize for the bad stuff and just embrace it all. But, you know, I'm just like everybody where you sit there and all through the 80s and 90s, it was, man, I would love to be on the bridge just one time. Can you imagine just getting a tour or being that guy in the background? Always had been a dream. And then in the third season, end of the third season of Enterprise, they had this auction announced that they were going to have a walk-on role. And basically it meant, you know, it was a bidding auction. So, hey, I've worked hard in my life to, you know, try and save some money. So I was like, I'm going to go for that. When they announced that, so I started monitoring it for a couple of weeks. And with about 2 days to go, I looked at the price and it was like not very high. People weren't that into it right then.
Really?
There was a little, you know, there was a little bit of that Trek fatigue at that time. The ratings were great. Yeah. So there wasn't a lot of people into it. So I told my wife, I said, I'm going for this thing. I'm going to try and get it. So I had all the things locked and loaded. I knew when the deadline ended, and about 30 minutes before, I put in my bid. And then, like, one other guy started bidding. Uh-huh. Then I bid again, and then he upped me.
Oh.
So I ended up going pretty high the last day. But as I always tell people, I never talk about the money, but I always say it's basically what you would pay for, like, a, you know, two-week vacation cruise, you know, somewhere.
That doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everyone goes on a vacation at some point. I would much rather do this. So literally, we went back and forth on this bid, and, you know, the guy, one last bid was like 2 minutes ago. I decided, I'm doing it. This is my last price. If I win it, I win it. And it came up that I won it, and it was really, I'm not going to lie, it was a pretty exciting moment. I was
nice.
Knowing that even, you know, walk-on role doesn't mean anything. Your scene can get cut. You could be the guy behind the beam for one little shot, and then you're out. You know, they don't promise you anything, you know? So, so from there, the studio reached out and contacted me, and they said they'll you know, try and target a date that works for me. And so a couple of times they had circled back with potential dates that we that couldn't work. One time I was gonna, they offered an alien in a slave market in the episode Borderland, the one with Brent Spiner.
Oh,
I considered that, but then I said no, because my goal had been to be in uniform and be on the ship somewhere, like one of the main sets, engineering. Obviously, the bridge is first choice. So then the PA, production assistant, calls me and says, hey, so next week we got a spot. They need somebody to come out and sit at the tactical station and fire the phasers.
So perfect.
You can do that. I literally was like, hung up the phone and was running around my office going crazy. So, but even then, you know, until you get there, you don't know if they're going to change their mind. Director's going to say, no, this other guy's doing that. You're staying in the back. But sure enough, I got there, and the director, by the way, was Roxanne Dawson, who's B'Elanna Torres on Voyager. So that was cool.
That's awesome.
They set me down in the, I was in about five different scenes. I fired the phasers. I put the ship on red alert, and it could not have been a more incredible experience. At all, it was phenomenal.
So, what was did they transported you out there? Did you have to make your own way there?
No, literally, I had to make all my own arrangements. So I knew it was in LA. My family's from Southern California. I live in LA now. At the time, I lived in Chicago. And by the way, it was on my wife's birthday, which was hilarious. I had to tell my wife. So basically, I flew her out to LA. I said, hey, we're gonna go to LA for the weekend, but you're not gonna see me on your birthday.
she must have been happy about that.
No, she was the most happy because she knows how important it is. So literally, I went to the studio at like 8 a.m. and was there until midnight.
Wow.
I mean, you know when they say those guys work hard? It's unbelievable how hard they work. I mean, it was 9 o'clock at night and they were still setting up for shots on a Friday night. It was exhausting, but yeah, they, you know, literally I didn't get any like VIP treatment or anything. I showed up on set. They treated me like an extra, and you know, they don't treat the extras that well. They basically like, hey, extra, stand in the corner. We're going to call you when we need you, because it's a business. They're trying to get their shots and run through everything. So I was just hanging out with the extras in the back. Of course, I was trying to sneak around to get a look at everything. And I was and I kind of snuck around the sets and took pictures and got a bunch of shots all over the set. After a few hours, they called me over. When they sat me down in that chair, literally the first time they ran through it with the fire and the phasers, their big grin on my face. It was a dream come true for sure.
So what was it like to sit there while they were filming that? I mean, I can't even imagine what it was supposed to be like to be on the other side of the screen watching this from a different perspective.
Well, it's funny because the very first scene, whenever I'm like showing it to people, and I do that a lot, the first scene, I'm sitting at the station and Trip comes because Archer and T'Pol are they're down on Vulcan. So Trip's the commanding officer and he walks in from the ready room and he glances up at the screen to take a communication from the planet. And so I glance up too at the same time. And hey, that's acting. There's no screen there, man. It's just a camera. but I'm glancing up at the screen at the same time he does. Great. Super fun. And then same deal with when they like said, when I put the ship on red alert, we ran through the motions once and they didn't really do anything with the lights or anything. But then when they were filming, we ran through and I pushed the buttons and all the lights went out. The screens all turned to red. I was just like, oh, that was me. I guess I did that.
It sounds awesome.
It was incredible.
So when you got to wander around the set, did you get to interact with anybody, actors or?
Yeah, most of the actors that were there that day, like, Connor Trinneer was super nice. The nicest guy I met was Anthony Montgomery. And I think anybody who's been to conventions and met that guy will attest to that. He could not have been a more positive guy on set, just with everybody. The crew, all the extras was great. And, at the very end of the day, it was nice. They finally did kind of introduce me and say, hey, we got Jim Morehouse here. He won this thing. And so everyone kind of took Gary Graham and a few guys were like, Gary Graham plays Saval on Enterprise. And it was his first, he had been on there for 4 years. It was his first ever day on set on the bridge. Hmm. So he's like, hey, I've been here 4 years. My first time on the bridge. You're here first day. You're firing the phasers. Which I loved.
So what kind of direction did you wind up having to take to do that?
Yeah, there was a little bit. So like I think it was Marvin Rush, who obviously the legendary director of photography for Trek. He showed me how Dominic Keating normally presses the button for firing phasers, which is basically like with your right hand, you kind of go up high to kind of set the target. And then you with your left hand, you hit this button for firing. So I was like, I can do that. So did have a little bit there. They did not direct me to give Trip a nod when he told me to put the ship on tactical alert.
Oh.
But I did that myself.
Oh, so wow. You came up with that on your own.
Gave the Trek nod, which was another great thing. I got to do the shake, they basically explained to you, okay, on this one, we'll yell shake. Everyone moves to the right. But the camera was behind me. So I knew if I moved to the right, I would move out of the frame.
Hmm.
So I shook kind of forward to the left so I would get into the frame. And it worked perfect.
Nice. And they didn't make you redo any of it.
No. And they had the sparks. I had a spark explosion over my head. I mean, I could not have had, could not have been better, literally. I would have paid double what I had for the experience I got. It's not an exaggeration to say that I think about it every single day.
I would too. It sounds like every Trek fan's dream.
Yep.
Now, when you go to the conventions, do they remember you?
No. Of course not. I mean, I've talked to Anthony Montgomery a couple of times just because, hey, I was on set for a day. You guys were super, super professional in the way you treated me. And same with Connor Trinneer. Were the two guys I interacted with most. I saw Dominic Keating, I saw briefly, and Linda Park as well. But Bakula and Jolene Blaylock weren't there that day.
So how heartbreaking was it to leave the set at the end of the day?
It's surreal. I can remember it. One of the smartest things I did, and someday I'm going to post this on a website, but the next day I literally wrote down everything I could remember, chronological.
Nice.
From the 2 days. So I was on set 2 days because the first day I went in for my like costume fitting. Where I was there for like 3 hours, and I went into the little room, and I actually worked with Bob Blackman, who helped set my costume, which was real awesome for me to meet that guy. He's such a legend. And then Yeah, so when I was leaving set, right when I was about to walk out, the second AD, who was a pretty cool guy, said, "Hey, you want to walk through? I'm going to give you a tour of Michael Westmore's makeup studio." Yes, yes, I do. That would be awesome. So about 11:30 at night on the set, looking at all, you know, his amazing makeup and artwork, and where he did all his design work. It's pretty cool.
Wow. So when are you putting this story online for us to read?
So I've been trying to work on a website to get something posted, kind of a bloggy thing with some of my Star Trek rankings, because if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I like to talk about Star Trek in all its forms, but I just love to rank everything and talk about what people's favorite things are about it. So I've been slowly working on that. It's been like my 2015 project.
Awesome.
So someday soon.
So, you know, Jim, speaking of Star Trek rankings, we're going to be doing a series wrap-up episode here in the near future. If you wanted to take part in that and bring your rankings to the table, that would be pretty cool for the original series.
Yeah, so twist my arm. Let's do that.
All right, awesome. Sounds like we've got another guest on the list for that. So, you know, before we sat down to record this, you were mentioning that you had something or some things that you wanted to bring up to me here. I'm very curious as to what these items might be.
Well, one of them was going to be, and would probably happen during our STLV conversation, was this cockamamie idea.
Oh, no.
That you and Fark, and even you got Rittenhouse involved too, all the five-year mission guys, that you think this guy was a plant and this whole feud, and that in terms of the Shatner Takei.
Hey, wait a minute now.
Feud. There is this is not a guy's not a plant. There's no resolution of this feud coming to push you know, any kind of attention at 50. And
all right,
and
right.
Thank God, you know, Heather Barker was the voice of wisdom. Someone finally came on and said, "What are you talking about?"
All right, so let's roll this back a second here. So what Jim is mentioning is something that we talked about with some previous guests on our last two STLV wrap-up episodes about the same guest or the same fan in the audience asking both Shatner and Takei about their feud. Now, I wasn't the one that came up with the conspiracy theory. That was Andy Fark.
Fark.
And I was bringing that up to the guests to see what they thought. Now, I felt like there was a possibility that there could be some conspiracy there. And it's always fun to think about stuff like that. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily put it past them to do something like that, to plant some seeds. But
I would say that it's not a possibility. No, I mean, listen, okay. The feud is real, and there's no way they're ever gonna bury the hatchet per se. And I think Heather said it best. It's not like that would drive any additional ticket sales. Yeah, that didn't happen. It's next time I see Fark, or next time we talk to Fark, I'll hammer him too.
You're gonna give him the what for?
Guys, conspiracy theorists. Oh man.
Okay. All right.
Hilarious.
All right. Well.
And there
was
there was one other which I'm gonna have to think of, but that was the main one.
Okay. That was the main thing you wanted to chastise me over.
I wanted to make sure. mainly just so I could sing Heather Barker's praise, because she was the only one to shut you down on it.
All right. Well, perhaps sometime we can get Heather on and we can talk through this like rational people instead of it being an attack show. But speaking of things that came out of the convention that are ongoing, this is something that I know that you are very, very gung-ho over, and I can't wait to hear your take on this, is the this grassroots movement to get five-year mission back as the house band for 2016.
Yes, I'm 100% behind that. I've been tweeting about it and writing to the creation guys. Yeah, I mean, listen, these guys, they're really a gold mine for creation. That they I think I tweeted it, they should totally exploit them in every way possible, because what these guys have created. And for those of you out there who haven't, you know, tapped in and listened to it, you know, if you're a diehard Star Trek fan and you also like, you know, good, you know, indie rock and good talented musicians, it's amazing the way they've been able to add to the Star Trek lore, you know? I mean, these episodes that I've watched 20, 30 times, and now I hear this song, and it's like, this is another way to think about this episode, another way to look at it, and it just adds so much enjoyment for me. I can't say enough good things about their talent level.
Yeah, well, we've extolled about them on this show so many times, and our listeners are probably tired of hearing us talk about how great Five Year Mission is, but it's always cool to have somebody else come on and do it for us. So,
yeah,
you know, since you were so kind as to bring up a surprise topic for me, I think I'm going to go ahead and surprise you if you're up for it.
Sure.
I think we may have somebody else who wants to say a few words to you.
Okay. What do we got?
So give this a second to settle in here, but I think we're going to have the entrance of another esteemed guest on our show here.
I see her name on the screen already. This is great news.
This could be an unprecedented if she picks up the phone.
Hello.
Hey, Claire Little. How are you?
I'm good.
Awesome.
So am I on the call yet?
You are on the call. We are live.
And we are being joined by the person with the single greatest Twitter moniker of anyone on Twitter. The at Isolinear Chick.
Yes, thank you.
From Jim. So, by the way, everybody, in case you don't recognize her voice, this is the incomparable Claire Little, co-host of the Atavacron series, jumping in.
I'm crashing the party.
So, yeah. Welcome, Claire. Welcome. Good to have you on board. And I think I will confess to the audience at large at this point that if it was not for Mr. Morehouse, tonight's guest, I Claire and I probably would not have met at the convention.
Well,
that's possible. Yeah.
And that's awesome to hear, because you guys, I really hope an episode of Atavacron does not break out right now, though, because it's too smart for me. It's too deep.
recording one tomorrow, so.
I heard that, right.
Yeah, this is going to be great. So, you know what, Claire, since you're here, Jim just got done chastising me over something that we actually kind of quasi-agreed on, and that is the Shatner to Kay controversy for the 2016 convention. Jim is fully convinced that this was not a plant or plan by Creation or Shatner or to Kay.
Of course it's not. Of course it's not.
Okay, I'll say for my own – so I did not think that it was one. Jeff, you mentioned it, and I thought that that was a possibility, but that is not something that ever occurred to me on my own.
Yeah, I let me just say I was disappointed in every single person that even entertained the possibility. So sorry, Claire. Sorry, Fark. Sorry, Rittenhouse. Sorry, Hewlett. It was me and Heather Barker are the only two sane ones that realized there was no plant, no plan.
Okay. This is where my discomfort with the whole concept of people being that tactless to even ask those questions is clouding my own judgment, because if it's a plant, then I don't have to think that people really are that dense, that they would ask the question and not realize that they should not be asking the question.
And we do know how you and Heather feel about the fan questions. I am much more forgiving for the fan questions. Let me go on the record. I don't mind them. Some are awkward. Some you have to kind of wince. Yeah. But even the bad ones often elicit great responses, and they force the guests to go in certain areas that they probably wouldn't. So I think it's worth it for those little gut-wrenching moments of pain where it is super awkward, which I acknowledge.
Well, it helps when it's a guest who is willing to think beyond the question that they're asked. I think there are some guests who maybe are a little tired up there on stage. Maybe they're a little... I'm just going to say it. Yes, thank you. I was like, how do I say old?
No, it's true. No, it's true.
And they're just distracted, or they have answered, you know, maybe this is their third panel in 3 days and they don't even remember what questions they've already been asked. Whatever the reason is, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes they just kind of stand there and blink or say yes and then move on, or no, or whatever the answer is.
But those are those little awkward moments that...
But I think are
worthwhile, and that you can't, you can.
I physically squirm. I physically squirm.
You actually left a couple times.
Yes,
I did. And it's not that I don't like, it's not all fan questions. I want to say that to people. I myself, believe it or not, yes, I have actually been a question asker once in my whole life.
What was it?
It was a Brent. I asked Brent Spiner a question, and it was, I should not even have opened this I'm not going to tell you what the question was.
Oh, come on.
Because I kind of delved into my own territory of things that drive me crazy about some fan questions. So I kind of broke my own rule a little bit. And I don't think I should never have even brought it up. I regret this conversation already.
You know what? If you did tell us, and I'm not going to push you, I bet you I would say, oh, I remember that. God.
No, it was not at this convention. Unless you were at the San Francisco convention years ago, right. But I will be fair. He did answer my question, and he basically I got a little episode specific, and that is something that, so I was not.
I love those questions. There's nothing wrong with those questions.
It's the kind of question that I want to be able to ask. Like, you want to have the actor or the director or writer or whoever sitting in the room, in your living room with you while you watch Star Trek. It's the kind of question you want to ask them in that moment. Like, what did you think of this? Or was this amazing or silly? But when you ask them and they're on stage, they often don't recall the episode very, very well, if at all. Thankfully, Brent Spiner did recall the episode, and it was a question that was really okay, fine, I'll just tell you the goddamn question that I asked. So the episode, I think it's second season, when Data has a beard for like 5 minutes. I think it's the teaser to the episode, and you see him and he turns around and he talks about, you know, you stroke it thusly, and it's obviously a play on the fact that Jonathan Frakes had just grown his beard. And so it's like maybe the second or third episode of the second season. And so basically Data's just sort of like imitating Riker. And of course it's hilarious and amazing. I had heard that originally they were going to have Data be partially have male pattern baldness, like Patrick Stewart, as his sort of hair change. But Patrick Stewart said no. He put his foot down and said, you can't make Data bald for 5 minutes. And so my question was if the beard thing was really part of the script, or if that was one of Brent Spiner's sort of famous practical jokes that ended up making it into an episode. That was my question. And I completely went way too specific. I broke my rule. But it did elicit a Patrick Stewart impression out of Brent Spiner. So that was pretty good.
So see, exactly that. So both of our points have been proven here.
That you can no longer
talk about this. And I'm right, because even lame questions elicit great responses.
Yeah. Well, I'm never asking another question again.
Beautiful. Beautiful. By the way, Jeff, I just want to point out that I have not swore once yet.
That's right. Claire did twice.
Goddamn doesn't count, does it?
And that's hard for me. That is hard for me.
I actually did swear just now. Not that I said the F word, but I kind of made it. I got quiet halfway through because I realized what I was doing.
I'm going to have to flag this podcast explicit for iTunes now.
Yep.
Thank you, Claire.
Really?
Yes.
Does that mean I can swear now?
Is it like the parental advisory sticker like you'd get on metal albums in the 90s? Really want it to be one of those.
Exactly. Oh, so by the way, let's station break. Let's pause for a minute here and tell the audience that this is probably going to descend into complete madness at some point here. So, please, if this does not appeal to you, please feel free to tune out. I'm telling my own audience to tune out.
This is basically one of our conversations at the Masquerade Bar on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday night.
Yes.
And anybody listening who comes to STLV should come hang out with us, because all we do is talk about Star Trek.
This is great. Perfect way to frame it, Jim. Thank you so much. I'm going to roll back and say this is not madness. This is STLV being relived in front of your very ears.
Yeah.
That's true. Yep.
I had hoped to come up with an F, Mary, kill to drop in here, but I had too much to think about at work today, so I didn't have a chance to think of one. But
wow. So this is the first time, Claire, that we've mentioned that we played that game so often at STLV to the audience. So this was one of the popular things that we did at the Masquerade Bar almost every night. I think we started the second night and did it every night until the end, and we would play that magical game that I'm sure that many audience members have played in the past. That is, as Claire so eloquently put it, F, marry, kill. So you pick three characters and you have to pick which one you would copulate with, which ones you would marry, and which one you would kill. So we were doing that with various different themes, weren't we?
Yes, and you quickly realize that it's, and I have to say, Jim, you're the one who started this, not this most recent convention, but the one before. You might have been doing it longer, but that was the right first time I got involved, and it was amazing. But you quickly shy away from doing actual, like, you know, humanoid characters that are sentient and that you would actually be able to marry, and it just goes into, like, we did planets. At one point, Worf's cloned spinal cord was one of the options. Yes, so that's the wackier, the better.
Yeah, the baby Borg in a drawer.
Yes, that was the worst.
It got very dark. It got very dark. We did non-humanoid alien creatures, starships, shuttlecrafts.
You start to get, like, anatomical, logistical problems, depending on if you're, you know, a man or a woman and you're trying to play. And it's like, how does that even work? Where does anything go? I don't know. But you still have to come up with an answer.
Yes.
I got excited at the end, and we didn't get into it too deep, but starting to do for episodes and do it basically watch once, watch forever, or watch never again.
Yes.
I love that concept. Three episodes. I do, but
let's take it one step further. For Kill, it's not that you watch it never again. It's that you remove it from the canon.
Oh, wow.
Because you're actually killing it.
That might be going too far.
Is it? No, I mean, you don't have... It's not.
Cutter mic. Jeff.
No?
Cutter mic off. Now, what if you cut an episode with a very significant guest star? That would erase that person from the canon completely?
I mean, if you had to do that and you did... you know, Balance of Terror, City on the Edge of Forever, and Muck Time. No, cannot remove any from canon. But you have to choose one that you will never watch again. That one's brutal, by the way.
That is still hard.
That is brutal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, my God. Mm. I have no idea what I would pick. Okay.
Remove Ultimate Computer from the canon and remove Claire's favorite character and institute.
No. Oh, no. I'm telling myself not to talk about what we're going to actually do tomorrow, but
I love Richard
Daystrom, but he's not my favorite character.
Well, I
love either. The Daystrom Institute. I just love that it exists.
We are very like-minded on that.
Yeah.
Okay, Jeff, get this train back on the rails.
Sorry, we got to get back on the rails before we completely go into a ditch here. So now that Claire is on, I think we can start talking a little bit more about STLV memories, much to the chagrin of our listening audience, who's been listening to us reminisce about this convention for a month now. But you know, that first night that Claire and I talked about a little bit, but we can talk about it from a different perspective now that Jim is here. So I remember fondly walking with you, Jim, over to the Masquerade Bar. We were having a conversation which Claire joined in on, and that's kind of the genesis of how we all got where we are right now.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. I remember it well, and I'm sure it quickly denigrated into F, Mary, Kill.
It did move on pretty quickly.
Yeah,
and
I think we spent a lot of time talking about the exercise tights that Kirk wears in Charlie X.
That's right, because we were talking about that. the one track mind that was coming up the next day.
Uh-huh. Yes, we were. You know, I hate to do this to you guys in the middle of another recording, but Jim, I had another surprise that I was going to drop on you.
Okay.
But now that Claire's here, I think this makes perfect sense, and we can get back to STLV in a minute, but in a similar vein to bringing Claire on, I think there's somebody else who wants to come and join in on this call and make this a real full-fledged STLV reunion.
Oh, boy.
Are you ready?
Let's do this.
Here we go. Now, I don't know how many of them we're going to get here. This could be two. It could be three. Is this how many five-year mission members do we have?
Two.
Oh my God! Which ones?
Oh no,
Mike and Andy.
Mike and Andy are here. Welcome to the show, Andy Fark and Mike Rittenhouse of Five-Year Mission.
So it's literally a masquerade reunion. Because
what's up, Jim?
Yeah. What is up with you guys? I was just ripping Fark.
What?
He's gonna have to. He's gonna have.
He
to
was.
Listen, though. We're gonna have to make him listen.
Yeah, Fark. I had to sell you out.
Oh, is this about the Sulu thing?
Or yes.
The K?
Yes.
Yeah, I sold Fark out.
Right.
But so now it's 4-1. You 4 knuckleheads that all think that that guy was a plant. And
no,
I'm telling you, Claire.
I entertained it, but it wasn't my idea. It never would have occurred to me if it hadn't been mentioned.
Backpedaler. Backpedaler.
No.
This is unbelievable. So once again, I will pause for another station break and tell the audience once again that we are really going to descend into complete madness now that Andy and Mike are here. So I'll tell you, Jim, that we've been planning this for a while now. We've been hoping to get you on the show so that we could surprise you with a small reunion.
This is pretty good surprise. Pretty good. I love it. It's basically like we're back at the Masquerade Bar. I love it.
Except I need more drinks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dead sober. Yeah. That's awful.
And I'm not in a Star Trek uniform right now, so this just seems wrong.
I was just playing Star Trek song, so at least I'm kind of in that mind frame.
So now that you guys are on, Andy and Mike, we were just talking before about the new grassroots campaign to get you guys back on the stage for STLV 2016. How do you guys feel that this thing is going?
Not as well as it could be.
Oh, not as well as it could be. Why? We're all emailing.
No, it can always be better.
I know you guys are, but I'm kind of wishing for more people to do it, obviously. I mean, the more the merrier, so they say. But, you know, we're still waiting to hear back from Creation. There's some back and forths going. We've been in touch with Adam. We've had good news and slightly troubling news.
Really?
And good news again, and then a little hiccup here and there. But, you know, we're keeping on him, basically.
This far in advance, they're already hemming and hawing over whether or not you're going to be back?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow. So we're going to have to put up with a year of this roller coaster ride, huh?
Hopefully not, because unfortunately this year it's the same weekend as Gen Con here in Indianapolis, which we've played for, what, the past four or five years. So basically, if Creation doesn't get him back with us in time, we're going to have to choose one or the other. Be like, should we hold out for Creation until like a week out, man, like we did this year? Or do we just go ahead and book Gen Con 3 months before it goes down?
All right, guys, we're going to do a full court press. Jim, you have to go to the 5-year anniversary show, and you have to get every single person there to tweet and email Creation from the show.
Yeah, I will work on that. And I've got some other angles that I can work.
Angles?
We'll talk about those offline.
So this episode was originally an interview of Jim Morehouse. So why don't we turn the spotlight back on Jim Morehouse? Everybody gets to ask Jim Morehouse a question. And I'm going to flip a 3-sided coin. I've asked Jim enough questions myself. 3-sided coin.
That's
So
what awesome. What sort of superposition crap is this?
Can it's it be a quatloo.
Heads and tails at the same time. Oh,
it's okay. A quatloo. Nobody knows what a quatloo looks like except me right now. It's got 3 sides. One side has Claire's face, one side has Andy's face, and one side has Mike Rittenhouse's face. So I'm flipping the quatloo right now. Mike, ask a semi-serious question.
Hi, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Jim, did you get to tour the entire NX-01, or did you only get to see the sets that you were on?
I did get to tour the entire NX-01, but as I was telling Jeff earlier, you know, they just treated me like an extra when I was on set all day. It was just like, hey, dude, just kind of stay on the corner. So I just kind of snuck around by myself and went through all the sets. In fact, when I stumbled into sick bay, I woke up a crew member that was sleeping on one of the beds. I was like, oh. Sorry, I'm just walking around. So that was pretty awesome.
Did you at least go and fart in Archer's shower?
I did not do that, but I did sit in his chair.
Nice.
Yes, and his captain's chair.
Oh.
Did you accidentally launch an escape pod?
I did not do that. No. I performed my duties to my utmost abilities.
Duties.
Firing the phasers. Putting the ship on tactical alert, and it was awesome.
So we'll put Claire on the spot. This is her favorite thing. Ask your fan question. Pretend you're standing to the right of the stage. Jim is up on the stage with the microphone. He's looking the wrong way. He's looking to the other side of the stage for a question. The spotlight focuses on you. Jim doesn't realize, looking in the wrong direction. You have to get Jim's attention and ask him a question. Go.
Mr. Morehouse, it's such an honor to meet you. I'm your biggest fan, I just want to say. Wow, I'm sorry. This is really, really amazing for me. You've made such a big impact in my life, and wow. Okay, so in episode 502, season 5, episode 2 of The Next Generation, in act 3, there's a line where Geordi says, "Captain, it's going to take me 4 hours to do this, but it only took him 3 hours to do it the episode before. Why was his piece of dialogue so inaccurate?" That's my question. I don't know. I honestly cannot think of a real question to
ask
you,
Jim. That is a perfect, perfect awkwardness for some of those lame questions.
I felt like I was there.
Yeah.
That was ideal. So now,
so answer
the
it.
Answer is that episode, I remember that episode. I'm pretty sure it was Remember Me, where Dr. Crusher is being sucked into a warp static time vortex bubble.
Which is a good episode. By the way, I'm going to check and make sure that really is episode 502. Because
I think it's
as an awkward fan, I need to be able to correct you in the middle of your answer in case you're wrong. Oh, because God. That is what they do.
I think it's 503. I can't remember what 502 is.
Darmok is episode 502.
Oh, what was Remember Me?
Oh, hold on. I am literally looking at the inside of my Blu-ray right now. Remember Me.
And I'm looking it up.
Yeah, because I don't know, my computer's not on.
It's, it's 405.
Right. It's wrong season.
Okay.
Mr. Morehouse, you've disappointed me so greatly. You used to be my favorite. Now you're not anymore.
I don't remember that day.
All right, so awkward question time. Now that it's my turn.
Okay.
Mr. Morehouse, who wrote your favorite 5-year mission song? Don't say what the song is. Just say who wrote it.
I know this answer because I do have a favorite, although it has nothing to do with anyone's particular abilities. It happens to be one of my favorite episodes. It's a rockin' song. I wish it was a little longer. Guys need to do an extended version.
Wolf in the Fold. But,
no.
Don't say what song it is.
The answer is Mike Rittenhouse.
Which is a little bit
longer. Yeah,
it just happens to be on this
go right to his head.
Podcast. Yeah.
Maybe it is Wolf in the Fold.
No, it is Errand of Mercy.
Oh, I said don't answer. All right.
It's a perfect song. It's like that's like the perfect length of a song.
I know. I just don't want it to end. I just love it.
It's pretty short. I can't remember. I think it might be under 3.
Oh, it's under 3. It's like a 2. Perfect. It's like a 2:30.
That's perfect radio length.
For sure. I'm just being selfish, Fark. I just want more of it.
It's punk rock long, bitch.
Exactly.
It's 2, Mike.
It's a really, really great song.
All right, keep the same order, except we're going to skip Andy since all he has is fart questions.
So, Jim, can I call you Jim?
Yes. Who is this again?
My name is Mike.
Okay.
Mike. Yeah, you just call me Mike. I mean, my last name is Rittenhouse. Imagine I fit in like a 10-minute long life story here that has nothing to do with my question, and then I'm going to ask you the question.
Perfect.
And then you're going to say, actually, I have 2 questions.
Yeah, and actually, I have 2 questions.
I have a statement and 2 questions.
did you get to meet, like, all of the NX-01 crew or just the ones that were in the scene with you?
I got to meet everybody except for Bacula and Jolene Blaylock, who were on the planet surface. They were on Vulcan. They weren't working that day. And John Billingsley, who was not in that episode. Which is a little bit of a tricky question. Oh. But everybody else was there. And one of the, and I didn't talk about this earlier, Jeff, but one of the great memories was, so at the end when they were done with me, it's about 6:00, and they said, all right, you're, however they say it, your call time's done. You can go back to wardrobe. So I said, do I have to leave? They're like, no, you can hang out, and we're just doing like a couple more scenes. So I went, changed, got into my regular clothes, came back like 9:00, and they were filming the scene in the episode where they're flying the shuttle pod down to the surface. So Dominic Keating and Anthony Montgomery showed up at like 6 o'clock for work that day to shoot that one scene. And they were going through it, and Anthony Montgomery could not get the line right. They're going through like seven takes, eight takes. It's like 10:30 at night. Oh my God. Everybody just wants to go home on a Friday night, and he can't get it right. And every time he messes up, and I felt so bad for him, he's just like yelling, "I am so sorry, crew. I am so sorry." And he was just making it worse, and he just couldn't get it right. And they finally, I mean, if I'm being honest, he never quite got it. They just kept like, "All right, pick it up from here." Roxanne Dawson, the director, was pick it up, and they obviously just pieced it together by the end. But it was super cool to see. I said earlier that Anthony Montgomery was unbelievable on set. He was absolutely just a great guy. He was super cool to everybody working. Just a great guy. And I felt so bad for him. But I love the fact that he felt so bad for all these, you know, crew guys who were literally, they didn't call the day till like after 11 o'clock. It was crazy.
God.
I was falling asleep. I mean, I'm like the biggest fan in the world, geek. I've been there for 12 hours, and I'm like, I'm dying. I need to go home. What are you people doing here? But I stuck it out. Best day ever.
I've heard that those okay, I actually have a question.
Yeah.
I've heard that those uniforms were surprisingly uncomfortable, considering that they just look like regular jumpsuits, like mechanics, you know, like regular flight suits, as opposed to spandex craziness. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Were they actually that uncomfortable?
You have no idea.
Really? Are they fitted in strange places?
My back hurts so bad. They're so constricting because they pull you down because they want you to be tight, right? So, which I was back then. It was like 14 years ago, people. So, my back hurts so bad because you felt just constricted. The whole thing was so constricting. That's the word. And just for me to get it on, just, you know, in the dressing room by myself, like trying to like get it over my shoulders and pull it through, I almost pulled a muscle. It was they were incredibly uncomfortable.
You know what? I was noticing that the other night since I'm doing my first
round
with Enterprise right now, and I noticed when Trip was putting on his suit in I think it was Acquisition. It looked like he was having a really tough time pulling it on. I was like, wow, I never realized how tight those things were.
That's right, because you can't, because just to get your arms in and get it over your shoulder, it was brutal.
Yeah, it looked like it.
Yeah. They did not give me any of the blue underwear, though. I was pretty disappointed. I asked for blue underwear. I did not get it. But I did have my communicator in my upper arm pocket my entire day on set. Yeah. Because I'm a dork. Again, you know, when you do this, and there's no guarantee you're going to be in the show. They can cut. There was one scene I filmed that they cut out. So you just never know. And I remember when I was at home, and I never heard from them, obviously. It wasn't that kind of deal. So when I'm watching The Fords, the episode beforehand, and we get to the end, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, shit, what if I'm in the previews? Because my episode's next, that would be awesome. Like, well, what are the odds? There's no chance I'm in the previews. So the previews come on, and lo and behold, I'm in the previews, and they show like the explosion over my head. And I literally, my wife was already asleep. I ran through the house screaming, "I am on the show! I am on the show!" Woke her up. It was awesome. That was a very memorable moment.
Did they have any, like, did they give you any really quick acting school or anything? Or did they have this sort of, I mean, what if it had been like a Paging Mr. Herman moment? I don't know if anybody knows what I'm talking about when I say that, but.
Your telephone call at the front desk.
Yes, exactly. You know, where it turns out that the person who won this role also can't not stare at the camera and mouth the words as the other actors are saying their lines, or just is extremely awkward on camera. Like, did they have any?
They gave me one bit of instruction for, and I mentioned this earlier when we were talking about firing the phasers, basically to kind of set it up with your right hand in the upper corner with like pressing a couple of buttons to get the phaser positioned and set, and then you fire over here on the left side with the buttons on top. that was basically the one thing. And it was Marvin Rush that told me how to do that, which is pretty cool. And then that was the main thing. The rest was just my, you know, natural God-given extra ability that I was born to do. Yeah, I told Jeff the very first scene, Trip walks by me and he's talking to the screen because there's a incoming transmission. And I'm right there. I'm looking up at the screen just like he is. There's no screen there, guys. No screen.
Oh, yeah.
It's what? Camera. Exactly. Acting. And when Trip tells me to put the ship on red alert, I gave him a nod. I'd been planning that the whole time. And they couldn't cut that out.
You got it, Trip.
All right, back to Enterprise then.
Yeah, go ahead.
Back to Enterprise. So obviously your first favorite Enterprise episode would be the one that you were on.
Well, here's the thing. Now, this is another part of how incredible this experience was for me, because I could have been in Precious Cargo. And I'm here to tell you right now, Precious Cargo is one of the worst episodes ever made of Star Trek. And I could have been just, you know, random back of random guy's boot in a scene in Precious Cargo. But I was in the episode that introduced T'Pau. Are you kidding me? When I saw that in the script when I was there that day and they mentioned T'Pau, I was like, what, T'Pau's in this episode? What are you talking about? Pretty damn exciting. So my favorite episode of Enterprise is The Forge, which is the episode before Awakening. Awakening's part two. But in my mind, I was on the ship somewhere in The Forge. So, because clearly, if it's a three-part episode, I'm on the ship in all three episodes.
You had to have been. You were in Archer's shower.
Exactly.
So. After some clever editing, you will be.
Exactly.
Boom.
So, it was another reason why this experience was very, very rewarding. I think about it every day.
So, fanboy Rittenhouse.
How many times have you seen the episode?
What do you think the bare minimum number I've seen every episode is? I've often wondered this.
Of what? All of Star Trek?
Of every single Star Trek episode, what's the lowest number?
Two, because for something like Author, you have to have watched it the first time it aired. Maybe you watched it again and realized how much you hated it. And then I'm assuming you never watched it after that, right?
No, I've seen it at least, I've seen every episode at least 10 times. There's really
Even the, like, Aquiel, the real stinkers, you make yourself watch them each time.
Yep.
Even Night Terrors.
Ouch.
Even Night Terrors, which I do not like.
Two moons.
Yep.
One moon circles. Oh my god. When I was like, okay, I got a story. When I was a kid and that episode first aired, for years after that, it was like this thing in my household to stand kind of the way she's floating and pull the back of your pants up so you gave yourself a wedgie and then say, one moon circles.
Oh, no.
It was like a thing in my house.
That's pretty awesome.
God.
And that is a terrible, terrible episode.
Jim has seen it at least 10 times.
I've seen it at least 20 times, at least. But this is what I always tell people.
Wait a minute,
it keeps
getting bigger. This is like
no, I said I've seen every episode at least 10 times. I've seen Awakening at least 20 times, probably way more. But people say, how can you watch the same episode over? I said, how many times do you listen to the same CD or the same album?
Oh, hundreds.
Exactly. So how's that different? This is a visual medium and audio.
Well, and it's not like, I assume.
Argument over.
It's more helpful.
Well, and it's not like you sit there and watch the same episode 10 times in a row for 10 hours on a Saturday. Although, I don't know, maybe you do.
I have not done that. I have watched the same episode consecutive. But
I have too. And not just because there's an audio commentary that I watch right after. I actually watched them. Yeah.
I have a legit question for Mike. Hey, Mike, how's my song coming?
That is a legit question.
Yes.
I have ideas.
So background information for those listening at home. Jim was the winner of one of the Kickstarter rewards to have a song written for him that he picked. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. They suckered me in with a, we'll do a song about any Star Trek episode. Ding! Oh, I know an episode that
and
I think
now
about.
I have your money.
well worth it. Hey, no pressure, man. This is art. You can't hurry art.
I've got a pretty good idea of what it's going to be. I just don't have anything concrete yet.
All right. I know it's in good hands.
Are we allowed to know what episode, or do we have to wait for the big reveal?
take a wild guess.
Yeah, to say I know what episode it is, but
what episode do you think, Jeff?
Awakenings?
It is. Yes.
Oh, yeah. My God, lucky guess. Whew.
AKA the Vulcan trilogy. I was gonna say, okay, let's do this, because one memory that nobody talked about, or one event, apparently I was the only person there, because I am a defender of Chakotay, was Michael Westmore putting Chakotay's makeup on, which I thought was a great event that Creation put on, and I loved it. It was super entertaining. Lots of good questions, and I like Chakotay. I think I'm in the vast minority on that.
So Larry Nemechek told us a funny story about the beginnings of that, where some of the makeup accidentally got wiped off and had to be redone in a very short span of time. So he actually had some sort of a tissue in his hand or something just before he was getting up to go do his photo op with the makeup on. And he just kind of, you know, reached up and wiped his face, I guess, with the cloth and took off some of the makeup.
Oh, I didn't hear that. That's hilarious.
Yeah. So Larry has the whole story in that previous episode, but that was pretty funny.
And I haven't listened to that one yet. It's in my queue.
What I want to know is why, for the whole special Chakotay makeup photo op thing, why is he in damn street clothes? It looked really weird.
Oh, that's right. Because
So I did Terry Farrell last year. I didn't. I did her photo op. When I initially bought the photo op with her while she had her DAX spots, they explicitly said it was just going to be makeup only. So I figured she'd be wearing regular street clothes. Then she goes and puts on that Klingon wedding dress, and I lose my dish, and so does Heather. Don't edit that one out, because that's legit.
I helped steam that dress.
Yeah.
Huh?
I got to help steam the wedding dress.
Really? Awesome. That's a weird and amazing thing to get to do.
The people from Innovos were backstage working on it, and they recognized me, and they're like, hey, what's going on? You having fun up there? Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, could you do me a favor? Come and hold this corner over here. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I think it is, isn't it?
That's cool.
So that's a good point, though, because Chakotay was in street clothes. But as I always say, you can explain everything away with some level of techno babble. And the easy answer is, hey, it was he was from 1996, Future's End. Good job, Rittenhouse.
So where's
Sarah
Silverman?
He was on the holodeck, and the hologram was a Star Trek convention circa 2015. So we were actually part of the holo program. He was the only real one there.
But so, Mike's answer is canon. So,
but mine is meta. I don't know.
True.
Nerds.
There were holodeck doors on that stage. That's all I'm saying.
They weren't real, Claire.
Yes, they were. Star Trek is real. It's all real.
Well, you got to inspect them. I mean, we were backstage at the final show by the Rat Pack, so you got to go up and examine the doors from the front and the back.
They were surprisingly detailed, considering that most people who aren't actually walking through those doors are not going to be seeing them up close.
My favorite part about them is that someone actually has to be behind those doors, like opening and closing them. And it was usually one of the funny little stage hands, and it was so funny watching them. Like, if it got stuck, they would flip out. Like, come over and help me. You're gonna have to pull them on the side really fast.
Robert, we tried to figure out how to open them. You knew how to open them the whole time, Andy?
Yeah.
We were trying to figure out. We thought there was a button somewhere that pushed.
Probably just a pulley, right? Or did they just yank on them?
What do you think? This is the future.
My hopes are dashed. Now my dreams are ruined. Thank you.
Fourth wall.
Oh, I really thought they were automagic.
Automagic.
Wow. Well,
that's automatic magic for you listening at home.
Well, Claire, rolling back, now we can talk a little bit more, since we're all here. We can talk a little bit more about that experience on that last night and how the genesis of your what I thought was the best tweet of STLV came to be. Since we're on the toilet humor and you guys have been cursing this entire recording, we might as well expose this.
So, which I think, Andy, you have told the story, and Mike, you guys have told the story of how we ended up getting backstage for the Rat Pack show. because you saved the show because you still had
five missions, right? Save the day.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Andy doesn't sound like Kathleen Turner anymore. He can do Max's voice. That's again. Right.
That was perfect, Max.
Continuity, guys. Continuity.
So we're all back there on sitting on these couches, and Jeff, I think it was you that pointed out, hey, you know, these are the same white couches that, you know, all the guests have been sitting on through the entire convention. And I just sort of quipped like, yeah, and they've been farting on them. And then of course I had to tweet it because you can't let a gem like that go untweeted. And so, you know, there we were sitting on celebrity farts.
Spectacular. Yeah. Brilliant. My favorite, it was my favorite tweet. And I remember I was looking at my phone and trying not to giggle. And thank you for Andy and Mike for getting us into that and generating that tweet.
And Chris.
So Andy and Mike, any favorite Morehouse memories from the convention?
The dancing. I tried to get it. Every opportunity I had, Jim, do the dance. I got a little bit of the dance in me. No, full-fledged dance. You get a little bit. All right, I'll take what I can get.
I liked some dude walks out.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
Yeah, I saw that out of the corner of my eye. I saw it.
The marching back and forth next to the buffet table was probably my favorite visual by far.
Not seeing the birthday ruined, but hearing the story like five times.
It wasn't ruined. It was just a little stink eye as he was leaving his event. Right, Claire? It wasn't really.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he, you know, said anything to you or threw his hands up and was like, it's ruined. Although that would have been pretty awesome.
Okay, roll it back. Tell the full story now.
Listen, when the band broke into remote control Spock, RC Spock, you know, you have to do the RC Spock dance. It's a must. So I was pretty much the only one doing it at that point, but I was fully engaged.
Pretty much as being generous.
And I happened to look over my shoulder as I was getting a little rambunctious and saw Cirroc Lofton edging his way out of the seating area and giving me a little bit of a stink eye because I was clearly
enjoying yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. A little too much.
And it was his birthday,
which I did not realize. Man. So, yeah.
So did you actually come close to hitting him with your RC Spock dance, or was it just very awkward to be that close to
him? He was pretty close to me, yeah.
You were using the whole space that you had.
And I was doing two parts, right? I was doing McCoy hitting the buttons, you know, and Spock doing the walk.
The more generous space than you had when you almost knocked over a table at Masquerade Bar dancing.
That's true. I did almost do that too. Hey, Jeff, thanks for having me, and I look forward to being back anytime.
Yeah, Jim, so we will have you back for sure on our series wrap-up coming up in the near future. I know we've been saying that for months, but it'll come here eventually, and Claire and Andy and Mike, thank you so much for joining in and surprising Jim with this impromptu STLV reunion show.
Huge surprise.
You're welcome.
Awesome. Get back to work.
All right. And we will see you all on the show next week. And thanks for tuning in. And hopefully we haven't put you off of the Tricorder transmissions.